Welcome to the Jet Setter Show, where we explore lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Enjoy and learn from a variety of experts on topics ranging from upscale travel at wholesale prices to retiring overseas, to global real estate and business opportunities, to tax havens and expatriate opportunities. You'll get great ideas on unique cultures, causes, and cruise vacations. Whether you're wealthy or just want to live a wealthy lifestyle, the Jet Setter Show is for you. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Jet Setter Show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, where we explore lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. I think you'll enjoy the interview we have for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds here on the Jet Setter Show.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
My pleasure to welcome Larry Grossman to the show. He is the Managing Director of Sovereign International Pension Services. And today we're going to talk about offshore IRAs and why you might want to consider diversifying some of your assets outside of the U.S. And, you know, we'll also find out in talking to Larry, because I know we have a worldwide audience, of course, if you're a non-U.S. citizen, how this might affect you as well. Larry, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. My pleasure.
Good. So you're in Palm Harbor, Florida, coming to us today, right?
That's correct. We're just outside of Tampa.
Fantastic. Well, one of the things I thought as I was introducing you is what I just sort of alluded to. Is this show really just for Americans that want to get their money outside of the U.S., or do you have clients in other parts of the world who want to have accounts outside of their own home country?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it sort of comes into my background. I spent 25 years in the investment management business where I did handle both retirement accounts and personal accounts. But the retirement side of the business continued to grow and take up more of my attention. In 2008, I sold the asset management side of the business and strictly focus now on U.S.-based IRAs and other kinds of qualified plans. So, unfortunately, I no longer handle people from outside the United States with personal assets.
And so why would a U.S. citizen want to do this type of thing?
And that's a really good question. And I think the motivation that people have had to do this over the years has changed and ebbed and flow. And where we're at today is there's really two kinds of clients that we end up dealing with. One set of clients are really just looking to try to get access to investments that they would not otherwise be able to get in the United States. In some cases, there are investments that are offered outside the United States. Maybe they want to own foreign land, or they want to deal with a non-U.S. asset manager, or reasons like that. And then the second group of people are really concerned about the direction that they think our government is taking towards their retirement plan. And specifically, there have been a lot of articles written that talk about forcing people to own treasuries either during the accumulation phase of their retirement plan or at the point they start to take retirement. And for those people, it's a safety concern. They want assets outside of the United States. They want to protect them. They want to diversify them outside of the dollar. They want to be able to do something different with them than they can through a traditional U.S.-based IRA account.
The thing that concerns me whenever someone talks about offshore money, whether it be inside of a pension plan or outside of a pension plan, any type of offshore activity, is doesn't that just raise a big red flag with the IRS? And aren't they going to harass you and audit you and ask a lot of questions? And how about that concern? Is that a valid concern?
Well, I think that's a great question. It's something you have to ask yourself. And I can tell you that I've been taking IRAs offshore for over 20 years. I've never heard from a client that it raised a red flag or caused additional scrutiny. And I'll tell you something that you can look at that sort of adds credence to that. First of all, most people, the retirement plan is a tax-deferred asset, or if they have a Roth, then they're doing tax reaccumulation. So to take it offshore, there's no tax reasons involved. So that doesn't raise any red flags right there, which is normally what they're looking at.
So actually, that's a decent argument, Larry, what you're saying, for if you're going to take any assets offshore, maybe the best assets to take offshore are IRA assets because it doesn't raise a red flag with IRS from that perspective because it's a non-tax account, right?
Oh, I totally agree. And I've said for years that if somebody was only going to take a part of their assets offshore, retirement plans make more sense. And, you know, just recently the IRS came out on the form that you have to file. If you have a foreign bank account, a lot of people call it the FBAR form or the TDF 9022-1. And it actually says in who's exempt from filing under Section 6 that a retirement plan is exempt from filing the FBAR form. So I think the reason is, just as we talked about, a retirement plan is tax deferred, so it's not something they're really concerned about.
Let's talk a little bit about how we do this. I think a lot of my listeners, although it's not a lot of the general population, but a lot of my listeners probably have or at least are considering self-directed IRAs. I have a self-directed IRA, and, you know, I have a fairly well-known U.S. administrator for my plan, and I have an LLC within that plan, so I have checkbook control, and I invest in income properties, rental properties, and also do hard money lending and private lending within my plan, and it works out great. I love it. I'm very satisfied with it. When you talk about taking your account offshore, what is it you're really taking offshore? Because I assume that with my current U.S.-based administrator, I could invest in a property offshore. I have an LLC within the plan, and I have checkbook control. You know, I don't even know if the IRS would care where I invest as long as I follow the rules of the plan. So if I bought a property in another country, for example, or did lending within another country, have I taken my plan offshore? What defines taking it offshore?
To me, the definition of what defines taking your plan offshore means actually having the assets, the investments, and the custody, not custodian, but custody of the assets outside of the United States.
So I guess we need a couple of definitions to have this discussion. First of all, what is a plan administrator, like Entrust is a plan administrator? And what is a custodian? And then what is custody of the assets? What do those three things mean? Maybe we need to know that.
Sure. Let's handle custody first because that's a really good one and it comes up a lot. Custodian, I like to say with a capital C, that's defined by the IRS. That is the company that is actually authorized to act as, and I hate to use the word in a definition, but custodian for your IRA. And in this case, custodian means a legal representative. Most people don't know this, but an IRA is actually a trust. And that's why in your case, the account would read Entrust Custodian for the benefit of your name. That's how it always works. They're responsible party. They hold title to the investment. They do the annual reporting. But that doesn't actually necessarily mean they're holding the assets. And that's what we call custody, small c. Custody means what company is holding it, what bank account is holding it. You know, you could use, again, just to use a name that's out there every day right now, J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan could be holding the cash, the assets, for your current IRA account.
So if your IRA account is in stocks or a bank, then whatever bank has the money or whatever brokerage firm has the stocks, that's the custodian. Or no, that's who has custody, right?
It could be both. It could be both. And in many cases, it is both. And honestly, for a lot of people, that's a big part of the problem. And I'll give you an example I always like to use. If we used one of the well-known discount brokerage houses, and you've been somebody who you've traditionally just bought and sold stocks, and you go to them and you say, hey, I found this great piece of real estate next door, so it's in the United States, and I want to buy that in my IRA. Can I do that? And their answer is going to be no. And they don't really mean no, you can't do it. What they mean is no, we won't do it. Why? Because there's a conflict. They're in the business of buying and selling stocks and making a commission when you do that, not holding real estate. And that really comes to the part about, you know, what does an administrator do? What's a self-directed IRA? And an IRA, by definition, is self-directed, so you can do whatever you want with it, which means manage it yourself or appoint somebody else. And an administrator, and in our case, what an administrator does is we act like the front office for the custodian. We're the people that you talk to on a daily basis to service the account. We're going to handle anything that needs to be done, helping you track contributions, distributions, doing all the right paperwork for your investments, making sure anything you get to, that you do gets done on a compliant basis. You know, work with a custodian on an annual basis to do the reporting, which is called fair market value. And for a lot of people, they're dealing with an IRA administrator. They just don't know it. They think about them like the custodian. And, you know, I sort of am a technical person. I like to make sure people understand there is a little bit of a difference.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. So I want to ask you to, let's do an example here, because sometimes that's helpful in clearing the air about it. And I'm only using Entrust because they're kind of a well-known name, at least around the real estate investment industry. They're constantly marketing to that group. But there are many other groups. So I'm just picking their name because they happen to be fairly well-known. So if someone has a plan, just as an example, with Entrust, and then they have an LLC within that plan, and let me see if I get this right. Would Entrust be the administrator, and then the custody would belong to the LLC they set up within that plan? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then the assets inside the LLC are just the assets, but the custody is the LLC.
Well, not exactly. The LLC is an investment within the IRA, but if you think about it, it just represents a structure, because in your case, the LLC has a bank account, correct?
Yes.
That's where the assets are at, so that's where the custody of the assets are.
Oh, at the bank. Okay, I got it. But once you deploy those assets into, say, an income property or doing private lending or hard money lending, then I guess the LLC has the custody because it's not in the money's not in the bank anymore.
Well, again, not actually, or it would depend on how you define it. So let's just use real estate as an example.
The LLC, you know, holds the title to the property.
That's right. It holds the title. So, but is there any money? Not really. You gave the money to the seller of the property, and now you own the property, and the property is owned by the LLC, and the LLC is owned by the IRA. So the title is in the name of the LLC, and your IRA custodian knows that you have an LLC, and it knows what the LLC owns. So for reporting purposes, that's how it flows. The asset isn't cash. It's actually the real estate.
Very interesting. Now, who in that example is the custodian? If Entrust is the administrator, we've talked about custody. Who's the custodian?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. So rather than my continuing to talk about Entrust, who I know very well and have worked with, you know, in our case, we do the exact same function.
Talk about yourself. Like, yeah, sure.
That's like Entrust, Sovereign International Pension Services, we call ourselves SIPS. We use a trust company because the IRS says in Section 408 of the code, so there I am being technical again, but the IRS says a bank or a trust company are authorized to act as an IRA custodian. So in our case, we actually have a contract with a trust company, so it's totally transparent, where we've gone and we've said to them, look, we want you to act as an IRA custodian. You know who we are. The clients know who you are and we are. We'll service it. We'll do all the work. So that's how it actually flows, and Entrust does something similar.
Okay, so now let's talk about when people do an international IRA. First of all, maybe tell the listeners, what is the cost of setting this up?
There's a one-time fee of $325, and it really just covers the amount of time and the paperwork that we need to get the IRA established and transferred from the current custodian.
Okay. And in what country is the IRA, if it's not in the U.S.?
That's a great question. It's going to be in whatever country you tell me you want it in.
Oh, so any country? You can put it in.
Correct.
Kenya or Canada? Either way, well, it doesn't matter?
I mean, I'm sure you know that the State Department has a few countries on the list of, hey, we're not friends with these guys.
Yeah, right. Maybe. So are you really telling us then, Larry, that you're not going to set up my IRA in North Korea or Iran?
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, well. So in other words, any country that has diplomatic relations with the U.S. probably is okay, right?
It is, and I can tell you where we typically see them, but okay. I always tell everybody, sure. You know, it's really up to you where you
Yeah, you know, what are maybe the top five?
What I see from people that we deal with on a regular basis is, you know, some of them are interested in European countries, and so they'll typically look to a well-known country. Interestingly enough, the European countries they typically pick are either Switzerland, Austria, or Denmark. And then we flip-flop from people who are interested in dealing in the European countries, and they tend to look at Central or South America, and in that case, Panama, because maybe, and a lot of people don't know this, Panama is a very big banking center with a really well-developed infrastructure.
And the infrastructure was built by us and the French, but also,
exactly.
You know, it also uses the dollar, so for simplicity purposes, and you're on the dollar too, so that's kind of nice. And they have that little canal thing that, like, the whole planet depends on. It's kind of handy for revenue too.
Yeah, it's kind of a sweet deal for them. I went down to take a look at it, and then I sort of ran the numbers about how much money it brings in. It was pretty astounding, really.
Yeah, I've been to Panama myself. I looked at investing in real estate down there. Didn't do it because, honestly, after visiting 64 countries, I still like American real estate far and away the best. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily want to have all your eggs in one basket. And it also doesn't mean that you don't want to do other investments offshore. And that brings up another question, Larry. Could you have an international IRA and then invest back in, say, American real estate? Certainly, my real estate investment company has an ample number of clients who are foreign nationals buying up American real estate. So would there be anything to that idea, or would that just sort of defeat the purpose?
Well, I guess it depends on your perspective. It absolutely is allowable. It's totally compliant. We've had clients that have done it. But again, many of our clients seem to be more concerned about what they think is an attempt by the government to tell them what they have to do with the assets. And for those folks, you know, once they get them outside the United States, that's where they want to leave them. But in other cases, it makes perfect sense to own a piece of property through a limited liability company, and some people want to add an extra layer of protection and make it a non-U.S. one. So, I mean, it really works either way.
Right. Now, why do people pick those countries? I mean, Switzerland seems sort of like an obvious pick with its reputation for being a money haven. I don't think that's very true anymore nowadays, but certainly for decades, it earned that reputation of being a place that you can hide money, put money, money's safe. It's away from the overreaching U.S. government, but not anymore. I mean, with the Obama administration in the last couple of years and UBS and those things, I don't think Switzerland's much of a haven anymore as it used to be, but they always kind of have that reputation. But why do people pick, like, Austria? Why do they pick Panama? And that's a Central American country. You mentioned South America, too. Is Brazil and Chile, are those popular choices?
We tend to have quite a few clients who have done business in Brazil, Chile, Uruguay, and Ecuador. And Ecuador, the biggest one by far. But in those cases, it tends to be a real estate transaction. Or a lot of them are looking for an eventual, you know, retirement home, and they find a piece of real estate, they buy it today in their IRA with the idea that, you know, down the road they take it as a distribution, live in it. Some of them are expats that are living in these countries because the cost of living is so low. And, you know, many times they want to have a bank account that, you know, is married to that property to handle any income or expenses. So that's why we see South America. And then Panama is, you know, kind of an unusual one. As we talked about, it's a very well-developed banking center that relies on the dollar. But I've had a lot of clients who are interested not only in real estate there, but in reforestation projects, which, you know, sounds sort of exotic. I guess they feel like, you know, I'm doing something good for the planet and I'm helping reforest, you know, a devastated area. But in addition to that, Panama offers incentives for people who invest in reforestation projects that can lead to eventual residency or second citizenship. So, you know, some interesting things that clients do out there. Well, I would say, you know, Austria, obviously, again, very well developed, great banking center. You know, banks don't fail in Austria. Most people don't know this, but they have bank secrecy written directly into their constitution. You know, that's nice, in my opinion. It doesn't really do anything as it relates to an IRA because, you know, who cares? It's not a tax purpose. It's just a well-developed banking center. And then the weird one to me, but once I started to learn more about it, was Denmark. You know, Denmark is very, very popular for clients because it's a really efficient banking center, very technologically relevant. You know, they're really up to speed, far ahead of a lot of the other countries in Europe, as I've seen. And that comes from the fact that it was originally such a big merchant shipping area. You know, they were known as the specialists for currency trading years ago before we had the euro. And still to this day, a lot of people go there if they need some kind of business transactions done in foreign currencies, and somebody specializes in them. So they've got a great track record for banking and asset management.
So it's $325 to set it up. And what are you setting up? Are you creating a trust in the country the person wants to place the IRA?
No, actually, all we're going to do is set up an IRA account just like the one you currently have, but with a new custodian that allows you to have a totally self-directed account. And they'll work with us in allowing you to have all these investments outside the United States, foreign real estate, anything like that. And believe it or not, that's the most important part of the process is I would be willing to state strongly that 99% of the people out there, their IRA custodian is not going to allow them to do anything even remotely like we're talking about, let alone, you know, unusual investments in the United States. So you have to get it with a custodian who will.
Right, a creative custodian, if you will. And folks, be careful. Check with your CPA and make sure that you're not going to get nailed for taking a distribution early or something like this. You know, you want to make sure you comply with all the laws and such. So if they set up the account with you, they're putting it into the banking relationship, the bank that you work with. What if they want to set up an LLC? Or an entity, I guess I should say, because maybe they don't even have LLCs in these various different countries, but certainly I'm sure they have corporations. That's pretty global, the concept of a corporation. They have to then set up an entity as well in that country to have checkbook control and stuff. Is it the same way it works in the U.S.?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, it's really a self-directed account, so the client can decide what jurisdiction they want to have the entity set up in, whether it's an LLC or a corporation. In some cases, the investment they're going to do would drive that. So if they were going to buy property, say, for example, in Mexico, you know, there's a very specific kind of entity they would have to use there. So the question really is, I think, what's the cost to do that?
Yeah, that is the
question.
And in
our case, clients are allowed to set up their own entity. And of course, then we have to charge them to review the documents to make sure they're correct. Or they can have us do it, and the fee is going to depend, obviously, on the jurisdiction where they tell us they want to set up the corporation. But I would say that, you know, it's critically important to make sure that an LLC or a corporation is set up correctly. Otherwise, you do trigger a distribution, which obviously you want to avoid. So if it's set up correctly, then it's going to be owned the right way. It's going to be compliant. It's within the IRA. We make sure there's certain language in the operating agreements, and you want to make sure that the document is designed to do what the client wants it to do.
Okay. What should I know? It varies with jurisdiction, probably pretty massively, but what should they budget? Would it be maybe $1,000? What does it cost?
No, it's really, again, depending on the jurisdiction, it's between $1,500 to $3,000.
Okay, so that's about the price of it. And how about ongoing fees? You charge a fee, I assume, annually, right?
We do. We charge an annual IRA custodial fee. It depends on the size of the account. The minimum annual IRA custodial fee is $600 a year, I believe. Actually, I got that wrong. It's $325 a year is the minimum. And then we cap the maximum annual IRA fee so very large accounts don't get penalized. It's capped at $1,650. We're happy to give everybody our fee schedule so they can take a look at it in advance and know exactly what their fee would be depending upon what they want to do and the size of the account. And that's it. I mean, there's no hidden fees, and we're not compensated by investments or where they decide to put the money or what they want to do. Our job is just to make sure that it gets done in a compliant way.
Okay, good. Well, anything else you want to say in closing?
Really appreciate the opportunity, and I think people probably don't realize how much there is available outside of the United States that they ought to take a look at, just because, you know, there's tremendous opportunity, let alone it really should give you some comfort to try and have some protection and have assets outside of the United States. And you know that you do it all for no tax reasons, so it's not going to cause any issues for you.
And where can people learn more? What is your website?
Our website is offshoreira.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and explaining this, Larry. I appreciate it. And there are options out there, folks. And one of the things we didn't talk, actually, got to ask you one more question. And call me paranoid if you wish, listeners. But in all of the hundreds and hundreds of experts that I've interviewed, I've run this question by them. And a lot of very reputable, smart people think that this may be the next big attack. And this is probably the biggest motivation. We didn't really discuss this one directly. We sort of went around the issue, Larry. But as the U.S. becomes more and more insolvent every day, what are your thoughts about the possibility of IRAs being nationalized in the U.S. like they were in Argentina? I think that's a great place for a desperate country to reach to find money.
Well, I have to tell you, and I almost hate to say this, but I think that the odds are extremely, extremely high. I have written numerous articles about this very specific subject that have been published. They're available archived on our website or on our Facebook page. And I research this and write about this on a very regular basis. It's not some wacky conspiracy theory. There have been numerous position papers. There has been testimony before Congress about this. It's actually a very big problem that most people just aren't even aware of.
Well, that will come at the sign of a crisis. Maybe it'll be even engineered, if you want to get conspiratorial, by the government, where there will be a stock market crash and people's plans are devastated. And then the government needs to step in and protect us and offer something like Social Security. They've done such a good job with that. Of course, I'm being completely sarcastic when I say this, you know, that they need to protect us from ourselves and the cruel world and nationalize the plans. And I think there's a strong possibility that kind of thing is coming our way. So that's another reason
totally
to consider
agree.
This.
And you know what they typically do? They sneak it into the middle of something else. You know, they're going to write a bill about why your car should have 5 tires, and there'll be 300 pages on how they're going to take over your retirement plan.
Mm-hmm. Something else, isn't it? Well, thanks so much for explaining us to this today, and everybody has the website if they want to learn more. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.